Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi guys, welcome back to the podcast. Before we introduce our next episode, just to ask you for a small favour, I really appreciate the hours that some of you are investing into watching the podcast that we've done in the past, but I'd like to ask you to do me one favour that would take you seconds. If you enjoy the show, please hit the subscribe button, and if you enjoy any show in particular, please click on the thumbs up. It'll make a massive difference to the podcast. So thanks very much for your continued support, feedback, and I hope you enjoy this one. Hi guys, welcome to the latest episode of the podcast, and this episode is brought to us by Gemmell's Van Sales down in Kilmarnock, who have been kind enough to help some sponsorship. A used van dealer with stock of about 60 to 70 vans, and been looking at their stock, talking to Jim the owner. Good people and good selection of vans if any of you need it. I'll put a wee link in the comments for anybody that wants to check their stock. So on with our guest today, fantastic guest for you again. Thanks very much for coming in, Bob Malcolm.
How are you, Craig?
I'm very well, mate. Yourself?
Good, good.
A bit cold this morning.
Oh, it's freezing. I've got shorts on as well, it's Baltic.
I noticed that when you came in. I thought you must have left the house in July. Right. So Bob, thanks very much, as I say, for coming on to the podcast. It's been great, the support with the guests with Adon coming on, so thank you very much for doing that. And I'd like to just go through your life career just in chronological order. It's the most logical way and tries to, you know, keeps things simple for us. Where were you born, brought up, and what was your early football look like?
Born in Brighton, for the first couple of years, and then moved to Denison, and then Denison to Springboigan, and that's where I've been. Well, my family's been ever since. Then got to football, started playing in the school with my pals, obviously in the playground and that, and then my first club was Blue Star, but I don't really know how I ended up there. I don't know if it was somebody in the school, played for them or whatever, and then I just tagged along and just went for there, basically.
Blue Star did up in Easterhouse, aren't they?
I seen Derek's podcast, and I think there was two different ones. Mine's was Riccese,
right.
The hub at Riccese, which made it a wee bit difficult for me because I was for Springboigan. They used to fight with Cran Hill, so I had to try and sprint through the up the street past them all before I could get training. But that was a good days, and some great club. I don't know even know if they're still going. I know the hub not still there, but it was a great club, great people.
What age would you have been when you started to get involved with organised football?
It must have been early doors, Craig. I can remember playing, obviously, it was straight into 11 a size. It was nearly like sevens and nines back then. So it must have been before I was 10, because I got picked up with Rangers when I was 10 playing for Blue Star. So it must have been 8 or 9, maybe 10.
And what age were you when you got under the radar with Rangers?
That was it, 10. 10. We played a game against Rangers Boys Club in a cup game. And they battled us 10-0, or 10-1, sorry. Oh. And I scored the goal and played well in the game, and then got picked up during that game. and then got asked to come in and train twice a week with him. That's how it started.
It's a fair commitment for you were 10. And who, back in your sort of 10, 11, 12-year-old, what sort of players were playing with you at the time? Any of them going to make a grade?
Blue Star, no, no really. It was mostly like Scheme Boys, and then they ended up going doing their own thing. But put women about to Rangers. It was like the boys like Peter McDonald, Steve McAdam, Kirk Willoughby, Big Mark Brown would have been there. Griggsy was a wee bit later. So good group of players, and we all but came through the system together.
And where were you training and playing at the time? What facilities were they using?
Yeah, we used to train at the community centre across North, community centre across the road, Fibrox. So we'd go there on maybe a Tuesday and a Thursday. And then again, you'd see, it was a great experience. You used to get like Johnny Hubbard, old David Wilson. They were always there. And then they would come out and speak to you, and probably we'd never even really knew who they were at that point. And then as when you go on in life, you go, ah, fuck's sake, that boy used to sit with us and like gaze his time, talk to us and stuff. So it was a great experience.
And then S-Forms, was that still a thing at the time?
Yeah, S-Forms. So I think S-Forms was classed as when you were in training with Rangers Tuesday, Thursday. That was basically classed as an S-Form. I don't know if you'd be signed in. So we used to play on a Sunday, so we would play with school teams on a Saturday morning. Then Blue Star, started off Blue Star Saturday afternoon, and then I ended up going to Rangers Boys Club, so then we played for them on a Saturday morning, and then it would be Rangers Select on a Sunday. So we're playing two, three games every weekend and training.
And then obviously you progress, you through into the ground staff, I'd imagine, sort of an apprenticeship type thing before you become a professional. So when did that happen for you, around about 16?
I was a wee bit earlier. I remember going into doing work experience at school, and I asked if I could go into Rangers, and they said no problem. So I got a week's work experience. But I can always remember, I think that must have been 15. And Peter McDonald, he was always like up there. He's one of the best players that I played with when I was younger. And I can remember he got brought into playing. It was a Old Firm game at Ibrox, and it was on Sky. Parkhead, and he went through and goal, and he like flicked and a mad flick, and ended up getting the goal and getting in. And I can remember him running away celebrating and thinking, I want to be part of that. I want to be like that. And then a couple of weeks later, both of us went in at the same time. He went in 2 weeks before me, and then I went in 2 weeks after him.
So
that was a start at 15, I think.
You're a Rangers fan, I think that's fair to say. You've been with Rangers a few years at, you know, kids for youth football. See, when you get told we want to sign you, how's that news delivered, and what's going through your head at that time?
It's a nightmare. I can understand where kids and parents knew they don't want to, like, their kids just football and that's it. When I was growing up, I just wanted to play football. I didn't care about any other work. And to be fair, I was lucky. My head teacher, he was a Rangers fan, and he knew, so he kind of pushed me. He knew that I wasn't like sticking in at school. But it was, I can remember, because at that time it used to be going to Ibrox, up into the manager's room, sign your contract, and then you were buzzing, you could take your family and that in. But it never happened that for me, because the day that I was getting into sign, Rangers had a game, so the manager and that wasn't there. But I was like, I couldn't give a shit. I was getting in, I was making sure that contract was signed. So I think Bomber done it for me. But it was a foul getting into the Walters office downstairs, coming into the room, and like you and all your teammates are there. So there's maybe 15 years waiting to go in and see Bomber and John McGregor. And then they give you the, like, yeah, right, we're about to sign you. And you're like, fuck, man. It's just like a weight off your shoulders. But then obviously everybody was in the luck like that. There was maybe, obviously in that, we had a good group, so maybe about 10 years all get signed and they let some go. But it was never anything.
And is this sort of 15 going on 16 years old at the time?
That would have been, even though I was in a wee bit earlier, the contract wasn't signed until you were 16.
Yeah.
So probably had that wee bit of, like maybe 4 months or something ahead of the boys where I was in training full time.
Yeah. And just out of curiosity, and probably a funny thing to think of now, but can you remember the amount of money per week at the time when you were signing that first thing?
I think it was the first year was £62.50. Then the second year apprentice was £82.50. But you got travelling expenses. But yeah, everybody was on the same. So it didn't matter if you were the best player or the worst player, you were still getting the same money. And then depend how far you lived away, your travelling expenses. So
when you're 16, it was a 2-year contract.
Two-year, yeah.
And then you're basically, you know, between now and 18, I really need to show here and get on about it. So what was that next couple of years like between, you know, between 16 and 18 and getting to the point where you're signing a proper, that's it, you know, yep. A 3-year contract?
It was good because obviously you're on, even though you're playing, you're doing a job, you're kit man, you're the boot boy, you've got a job, so you need to be in there 8 o'clock in the morning. If your late bomber's got you in the treadmill or the run machine for half an hour or an hour punishment. So everybody was bang on, used to always wear a shirt and tie, same as the first team. You had to be at it, or Bomber wasn't scared to just say, you're not good enough, on you go, even if it was 2 months into your contract. A few boys get let go straight away. Because some people can't handle it. Because you're not getting told what to do day in, day out. And then as soon as your people's on your case, and some people crumbled, and some people right rose to it and got through it.
So, Bomber mentioned was the youth team coach at the time. Is that when him and John McGregor worked together? Yep. That about the same time? I think a lot of people forget or don't realise that Bomber was a coach. He went on to manage as well, Dundee and whatever, later on. Most people remember him for obviously his playing days, and some people remember him for, you know, protesting stuff and standing up against Craig White and one thing and another. But what was he like as a coach?
Bomber's brilliant. He was brilliant. Obviously played the same position as me, so he helped me along. Me and Morris Ross, Big Andy Dewey, he would take us to like sessions ourselves and stuff. But he also had that bit about him where he knew what it took to be like that level to go to the first team. And even to play in the reserves when we were in the youth team. You had to be better than everybody else because at that time you had Durante, Charlie Muller would probably have been still been playing in the reserves at that time. Goffey, Stuart McCall, if you're coming back from injury, you played in the reserves, and you try to get in that team because it was a big squad, and that was a good thing as well. You were playing with these guys, even though you're 16, you're playing with Durante when he's coming back from his knee injury, getting to experience what it's like.
And did you go straight into the reserves after signing your first apprentice contract, or did that take a wee bit of time?
I didn't go straight in. We played, because obviously you've still got, when you sign in 16, you've still got apprentices that are there been the year before you. So they're a year ahead. So they're playing in the youth team and the reserves. Yeah. And then you're coming in and trying to just get into the youth team. But I think for a few years, it maybe took us a couple of months, and then, like, because I went in, like, started as a striker and ended up midfield and then back centre half. And then when I played with reserves, I was playing with like a right wing, but right wing back, because Bomber and that were playing, he was still playing at that point. So they would play three at the back, and then I would play right wing back. And getting to, like what you said earlier, you're getting to learn different positions. So it was good for me, but I'd say it was the same, but you rise up to it. Even though Bomber was hard, he was brilliant and he was fair with everybody.
I think because of his playing time, and then, you know, the time he's done with sort of protesting and stuff, people don't appreciate how knowledgeable coach Bomber is. Any bit of time I talk to him, you know, tactics and coaching, and you know, I just pick everybody's brains because I run a kids football club, so for me it's great talking to people like yourself that are, you know, been in the game at a great level. And I think he's underestimated, to be fair, as a coach. Do you agree with that? But, you know, you get better to gauge that than me, you coach, man.
100%. I think, like, I don't get got the credit. If you think when he was a coach, the youth team, him and John McGregor, how many players actually came through at that point? Loads. And they might only have played 2 games or 3 games, but there was loads of players that came through under them. And that's what it was. It was the coaching. It wasn't like they don't have curriculums now where you need to work on this for a month. You need to work on that for a month. If you were shite at defending, then you worked on defending, and then you went forward for there. And that's what that was a good thing. And it's something that doesn't happen now.
Do you think? And no disrespect to anybody that's a youth team coach just now, but do you think we've got enough of John Browns and Ian Durant and people with yourself that have got 100-plus game experiences playing for Rangers and to a certain extent know what it's all about? It's not just thinking they know what it's all about. Do you think we've got enough of that just now?
I don't think so, no. I don't think we've had enough of it for years. And I understand that they've got a system in place where they like to do their own thing. They've got curriculums now, what I said, and they stick to that. So they've got coaches in that they think they can do that the best. But I think you need, even if it's not a coach, even just to be somebody to bounce off. Because I know that Bomber's been in and spoke to kids. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me a story yesterday where it was the time in Ballygulmore that was there. He went to speak to them. And he said to them, how many are going to play for the first team? One player put his hand up.
Stop it.
One player.
And Bomber went to battle the other 15.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
One player puts his hand up and it was Ballygulmore. And he ended up saying to them, what is the point of you being here if you don't think you can get into the first team? Mm-hmm. He says, in fair play to that boy, he says, for putting his hand up because he knows now that when you go into the dressing rooms, you're going to rip the shit out of him. Mm-hmm. He says, yeah. But fair play to him for actually putting his hand up. Look where he is now.
That's a weird thing because it must have been a fair group. Even if it's one squad, you're talking about 16, 18 players. And so maybe they thought at 14 or 15, whatever age they were, then where at that point is that's they made it. Is that maybe where a lot of young footballers are today?
I think so. But I think that was something back in the day as well. I think if you were, no, so much you made it, but like when you actually did make it, it wasn't a big, massive thing because you're in the system. And even though you're 16, you're playing with 18, 19, 20 year olds, and then obviously the adults when like they were playing the reserve games. So yeah. they don't get that exposure now.
Yeah, it's a bit scary that. You think, a level of club like Rangers, but I've been fortunate in the last couple of years that I've been out to Benfica and Real Madrid and these places with our club kids. And the one thing that got me, when you look at the guys that are involved with other youth teams, the vast, vast majority of them are ex-players of the clubs. Mm-hmm. And again, that doesn't mean, if you're a coach that didn't play for a Rangers or Real Madrid or a Benfica that you're not a good coach. But these clubs, it's institutional clubs, as it were, they're different. Rangers is different for Dundee United. It's different for Hibs and Hearts. That's just a fact. Yeah. There's no point in debating that with anybody. Your Real Madrid and Benfica, they're different level clubs as well. And I think not only do you need to have a good understanding about football, it helps to have a good understanding of that club, the ethos of the club, the history of the club. And, I thought Benfica was some setup, and they are. And then we went to Real Madrid a couple of months ago, and it's just a different level again. And if it's good enough for Real Madrid and Benfica, you think, why is it not good enough for Rangers? And I think there are some very good guys involved in the Rangers youth setup now, but it's just something that I think's missing. But when you made that first step up to play for the reserves, can you remember who was in the Rangers team at the time?
Yeah, I remember it was Anthony Emmy was in goals. Bomber was playing. Gordon Petrich. Big Scott Wilson. I think the Stolly Stensas.
He was Norwegian.
Stuart McCall, Charlie Muller, Durante. Bomber ended up getting goals because Anthony would get injured. We didn't have a sub goal, so he ended up getting goals.
Is he any good?
He was all right. He was all right. But that was my first reserve game and just an eye opener. And you're playing against, it was Hearts we were playing at Bathgate. And you're playing against guys that play for their first team. So it's not as if you're playing somebody at your own age, which is, again, an eye opener because you're thinking, watching these guys in the telly all the time, and then you're playing against them.
And what position did you play that day?
Right wing back.
Did you start the game?
Start, aye.
And see that team, see any other game run about that time, if that was a Rangers starting 11, nobody would really raise an eyebrow at half of their names. No, incredible, wasn't it?
They were playing, like, Stuart McCall, he was out for 2 or 3 months with a knee injury, and then he came back, 2 games in the reserves, and then he was back in the first team. And it was the same with all the players, Gordon Petridge, maybe had been suspended or something,
aye,
playing in the reserves, just to get his match fitness then back in the first team. So the one that was players that weren't like just squad players, these were the guys that were starting all the time.
Yeah. And did you learn much during that process?
I think that's how you learn the game. You learn more about the club, more about you. Because you're a scared wee boy, do you know what I mean? Playing with the first team, you don't want to shout at them. But then Bomber says, I go at you if you're not doing it. So you do it. Because there used to be an unwritten rule in training. Can't tackle the first team, can't smash them right in training. So you weren't tackling them. And then Bomber's like, no, that rules out the window now. If you're in playing, then you're tackling. So, but they didn't like it. The first team didn't like it if a young boy was taking the ball off them or tackling them. That was just one of the things.
So between sort of making your debut for the reserves, would have been about 16 and a half-ish. What age were you when you made your first team debut?
I think it was late 17, it must have been 18, maybe 18. But I played I remember going to a reserve game, it was a game at Christmas when all the pitches used to be frozen and stuff. And Walter managed to get a game against Raith Rovers. But at that time, the youth players used to carry the hampers and stuff. So I was helping with Jimmy Bell that day. Archie said to me, like, bring your boots and you can go and do the warm-up and have a kick about. I went out and done the warm-up and I came back in and done the team talk and he's like, right, you're playing. And I'm like, what? I played right back and that was an eye-opener because that was like Loudrup and all that were playing in Gaza. It was like a mix of the first team and a couple of the younger boys. I remember I was playing against Kevin Twaddle and he was absolute rapid. And they were just putting the boy on my head for the first 10 minutes and he was sprinting on and I crossed into the box and the goalie was in goals and he's shouting at me, for fuck's sake, Bob. What do you want me to do? He's fucking faster than me. And after 10 minutes, he came out and he's put his hand on my shoulder and he's been like, listen, see the next time he gets the ball at his feet, smash him. And I went, right, so I just smashed him. And he's like, that's what you do. The cunt will no come near you again now. I'm like, brilliant. But then it got to half time and I was struggling. The level was too good. Even in that, Kevin Todd, I know he played with Motherwell and that, but I don't know what division Raith Rovers were in at that point. If they were in the Premier League or if they were in first division. And it was too good for me at that point. And then obviously, Walton actually seen that and they took me off at half time. But what an experience being in the dressing room and seeing all the guys. How it works.
And was that long before you made your first team proper?
That was probably a good year and a half or something before that.
So you must have been 16 then, eh?
I was maybe just turned 17. But it wasn't expected. But that's what used to do, it's used to throw people in.
Brilliant. Right. You're playing with reserves, youth team, training all the time with the first team, getting flung in at Raith Rovers and that sort of stuff. Did you have any like trips and stuff like that at that age? Could tournaments going away? Was that a thing back then?
Aye, we went. Bomber took us to Australia, took us to Chile, Seb Rosenthal. Played a couple of like a wee mini tournament. Unbelievable place. And to be fair, Seb's dad was minted and he looked after us. But I can remember going to, we went to Australia, we played against the Australian national team twice, and Northern Spirit, we played against them. Mm-hmm. So we were only kids, we were in the youth team, and we was playing against theirs, under 20s, and then Northern Spirit's first team. And that's when the club had the link with them. Mm-hmm. And that's when I kind of got noticed a bit, because we were trying to sign a boy that played for Australia, a big boy, I can't remember his name, Bojic or something. He played for a team in Croatia Zagreb or something. Yeah. And they were trying to sign him. And then Bombers came back after that tournament and says, look, we've just seen him and we've seen Bob playing, and Bob's ahead of him just now for us. And that, when I came back for that tournament, that's when I got pushed into the first team and training with Dick Advocate. And
that's incredible. So at this time, I think your age and what year it would have been, who was it? Walter Smith was the first team manager at the time?
No, he was, Walter had left at that point, so right. That was, Dick had just come in. So that was just early on in his.
Was that a culture shock when the little general turned up?
Nothing really changed for us, because he was more involved in the first team and never really took anything to do with us. The first team had, when the training ground was built, the first team went there, but the reserves still, we only get changed there, and then we still had to go and train at Jordan Hull or West of Scotland or wherever. So they were a part of us, and that was the drive, because you wanted to be there. And Dick was good that way, because he used to, he kind of played with your head a wee bit. So he would maybe take me training Monday, Tuesday, and then he would leave you back on the Wednesday, when you think to yourself, I'm going to train the first team today, and then he would go like, Andy Dewey, you're training me as a day. So that way, it kept you hungry. And he'd done that way. It was mostly at that point, it would have been me. Morris Ross was involved. Big Andy Dewey used to train with him. So it was about four or five they would bring up to train, depending on what position they needed. And that's what kind of gives you the drive to get in.
And who's Bomber still there at the time?
Aye, Bomber still. He's still the reserve manager and youth coach, so they were still there. John McGregor was still there. And they brought in, like, Jan Derks was the head of youth. Tommy Sengen, played with the winger. His brother was the Dundee United.
Oh, McLean?
Tommy McLean, aye. He came in. He came in to take the 18, sorry, and Bomber stepped up to the reserves in 21s. So it was.
So you're doing all right. You've progressed a bit for your first interaction with Rangers. You're now 18, 17, 18 year old. And you get the nod one day you're going to be playing for the first team. You're in a squad. What happened there?
Well, the rule changed, didn't it? It was brought in the under 21 now. So
was that three in the bench or something, or three in the squad?
Two in the bench. You had to have two under 21s in the bench, but that you could involve a goalkeeper. So at that point, Barry Nicholson was still eligible. They brought in the boy Luigi. Can't remember his second name. Rico Riccio.
Mm-hmm.
Gattuso's assistant manager.
Yeah,
they brought in him. So rotated about four or five is. So that got you involved. And then just through that, you'd never think you were getting a game. And then Dick threw me on one night at Ibrox, playing Dundee United. And played a few games of that season. Then you get a taste for it. And then that's when we used to have numbers on were jumpers. And the first team had their initials. And then you go into, like, you're coming into training and your initials are on your tap. No, it was brilliant for me having that. But you kind of look too much in it, because then you start thinking, oh, that's me made it. And, but to be fair, Dick put me in my place, because I got caught. That was near the end of the season. I played the games, three or four games in a row. And then we had a break for the summer. And I got caught playing in a five-side tournament. And Dick said to me, you're finished. That's you, you're done. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, you can't play in tournaments like that. And they sent me on. My agent got me a trial with Wigan to play in a game. I think it was for Clyde Bank. Derek Ferguson, that was the manager at the time. So I went down and played in that game. Done well. And then Paul Jewell was the manager of Wigan. He said to me, we can't. Well, he didn't say to me. He said to my agent, we don't want to sign you because you play too much football. And that was at Wigan at the time, where the Championship and League One and that was just long ball.
Really?
She says, but we're not looking for that sort of centre-half. I was that fine. So I ended up going, I had to go back to Rangers. And luckily for me, Dick had a bad spell. And that's when he left and Alec came in and I got my chance again.
But during that summer, were you basically touting yourself to other clubs and just trying to get a move because of what he told you?
No, it was I never really knew what was happening because it was like the middle of pre-season or the middle of your break. And I didn't know anything until I went back. I went back and then Bombers were like, you're training, you're not training with the first team now, you're training with the reserves again. And never really heard anything for months. And then he's like, Dick's like, you'll not be in the first team for what happened.
Hi guys, I'd just like to take a minute to talk to you about NordVPN, which is a company that I use their services. I use it majority of the time when I'm travelling abroad, when I want to keep up to date with the programmes I'm watching at the time, or more importantly to me, the sports that I want to watch when I'm abroad. So it doesn't matter where I am in the world, I can still watch the channels and the games and the sports that I want to. It also gives me security and some privacy that I'm looking for when I'm browsing the internet. They've got an exclusive huge discount available to viewers of the podcast, and they'll give you an additional 4 months free on top of whichever package you go on if you use our code. To get that, plus a 30-day, no quibble, money-back guarantee, all you need to do is log on to nordvpn.com/Craig, C-R-A-I-G, and that'll get you the exclusive discount plus the 4 months free on top of whichever package you go for. So go and give them a look, guys, and certainly I've had no problem using them in the times I'm travelling abroad, so I mostly use them. Thank you very much.
See, I was just lucky that he went through a wee bad spell and had to leave.
Left. But in between that conversation and him leaving, there would have been suspensions, there would have been injuries, and there was just nothing, no getting near it at all.
No, just reserve games. No, anywhere near the first team. He'd done the same thing to Charlie Miller and Dan McInnes. They were playing first team, and then they put them down to the reserves, and they weren't involved with the first team either. I think Derek got back in for one of the games. He came back in for a Champions League game, I think, done well. And then played a couple of games and then was back out again. But that's just the way it was.
And are you just thinking at the time, that's it, my Rangers career's over here?
Yep. And then it was coming up to like Christmas. And I can remember my agent saying to me, look, there's Wolves are interested in taking you on loan. Who else was it? Ipswich, QPR, I think. At that time, Thingmay was the manager of QPR.
Haley?
No. Was it Haley? No. Wilkins. Might have been Haley, but it was Wilkins with him.
I'm not sure.
Ray Wilkins was there anyway, because it was him that said, can we take him on loan? I was like, I would shit myself, because obviously I've never been away from home. Mm. And just when I was ready to say, I want to go, then that's when Dick left. Or he never left, he went upstairs. And then Alec came in, and there was injuries. In the first couple of weeks I was in the first team. And then
tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Got to run a game to the end of the season and then signed a new contract.
So was your contract just a year to go at that point?
Yeah, my contract was up at the end of the season.
Oh. So some change of fortune, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Going for that, you know, you never play again. You're out on loan. contract's up in about 6-7 months, and you're thinking this is the end of the journey, and then what's your head like at that point?
Well, to be honest, I never really thought too much about it because I didn't really want to think about it because that's where I wanted to be. But it's not nice to say, but I was glad that Dick had a shit spell because then obviously got me back in my opportunity. But people say to me, do you hate Dick Advocaat because of what he'd done? I don't hate him because he was a great coach. He gave me my chance. It was my fault for what happened. But I thought he could have been, because I was younger, I was probably only still 18 at that point. He could have maybe took me to the side and says, look, you're no near the first team, but try and build yourself back and get back in about it. It was a point blank, no issue. So I had, luckily enough, because of the experiences through Bomber and all that, I had that bit about me that I was like, I still need to knuckle down and play with the reserves and do well there. And then if I need to move, then I need to move.
Incredible. So what was Alec like as a breath of fresh air for you? What was it, training and stuff like with him?
Training didn't really change much because Jan Wouters was there, so he used to take all the training. The difference between both of the managers was Dick was hands-on. He used to take part of the training, whereas Big Alec would maybe just stand at the side and watch and then step in if he seen something that he didn't like, or step in if he wanted to see something to work on. But no, he was good for me, encouraging. Just told me to get my head down, and I think it was like maybe 8 or 9 games left. I think I played 7 of them. So he's like, it's up to you. Basically, you've got, because Craig Moore got injured, and he's like, it's up to you to go and get a new contract.
And when did they tell you you're going to renew your contract? Did they wait to the summer, or did you have that conversation?
Well, actually, I think I went away, and I don't know if the rule's still the same, but I know that if you've come through the ranks or the system, they kind of just release you, or they couldn't just release you. They had to at least give you training facilities until you got something else or whatever. So I still hadn't signed my contract when I went back for pre-season. They'd offered me one, but I hadn't signed it. And
A wee bit more than £62.50.
It was a wee bit more than that. But not much. but I can remember like going away in my summer holidays, and at this point Kevin Muscat and that were signing. And my agent's phoning me and saying, look, there was a team in Italy that was interested. I'm going, oh, fuck's sake. But it was like Kievo or something. And I'm like, can't go there, don't speak the language, don't do this. And then it was getting closer to going back to pre-season, and nothing was happening yet. And then they also said to me, look, the contract's here for you. It's up to you if you sign it or not. And I think after about maybe 2 or 3 days of pre-season, I signed it.
And how long was that one for?
That one might have just been a year. A year's contract, and then I signed, I think maybe only 6 months into that season, I signed another 2 years, and then another year I signed another like 2 years.
But
it was the same contract length, but it was just my money went up. Mm-hmm. But it used to be brilliant because the chairman used to come in and he'd go like, fuck's sake, Bob, are you still here? Fuck's sake. But he was brilliant. He's just he even did the mad Ronald DeBoer, players like that. He would rip the piss at him, and they could really send him.
A lot of influence in the club for a long time. You've got to give him his place.
It did, to be fair. And I know that a lot of fans and a lot of people have given him pebbles, but for me, he was great with me. And to be fair, he was one of the only ones when I left the club. He was one of the only ones that sent me a voicemail saying, "Listen, appreciate everything you've done. Trophies that you won for the club and that, so go away and get stuck in and maybe see you back one day."
I think Sir David Murray, because of what happened at the end of his tenure with, you know, selling it for £1 to Craig White and then had money within a year and all that stuff, I can understand why some people is tainted his opinion. And somebody asked me about it one day, what was my thoughts, and I said, look, see, for everything that you think he might have done bad, but he gave us 9 in a row. He gave us Loudrup, he gave us Gaza. And I'm not sure now that the Rangers revolution did start before him. A lot of people think he came and then Souness came and then The world changed for Rangers. It didn't quite work that way. It was David Holmes that started. They were getting Graeme Souness in, and then Sir David Murray came a wee bit after that, and I think took it to another level, to be fair. So, you know, I think you've all, you kind of, I think there's a big grey area what happened when Rangers got sold in 2011, which led to the admin in 2012. But you've always got to think, what if he didn't come at the start? And, you know, look at the tenure he had and the things that we, you know, we all witnessed as fans before you were lucky enough to play for the club. You were a fan of the club. And, you know, he gave us a lot of that. So I'm not saying that people shouldn't question what happened with the pound and duped and all that sort of stuff. But I think to just concentrate on that is a wee bit disingenuous, not only to David Murray, but also to that time in Rangers history. Things were different then. I mean, they were spoiled.
Totally different. Totally. And you've got to remember as well, that was the time when it was a 3-4-0 rule.
That's right.
It was mostly Scottish players, and he built the stadium. Listen, we were talking about this last night as well. See what you think about Man City and the City Group and all this. They've got 3 or 4 different clubs of the world. David Murray had seen that 30 years ago, mm-hmm. and tried to do it like Northern Spirit, tried to do it in different countries because he knew how big Rangers were and had fans all the world. But obviously it never worked out the way that these clubs have worked out. But he had that vision years ago to do these things. Mm-hmm. But I definitely think, I know what you're saying about what happened at the end. It's obviously a grey area for fans and stuff and the club, but what he done for the club at the start and putting in what he put in, and I don't think you can knock him for that.
And was he quite hands-on?
No hands-on. He was at most of the home games, and he would come in, he'd come into training. He's just a normal guy. I know he had a few quid, but guys like me, we would try to fucking hide in the corridor for him because he was shitting himself. You know what I mean? In case he said something to you. But he was just a normal guy. He'd laugh and a joke. And it was just, obviously, he's not got any legs, so it's strange. And you don't really know what to say to him in case you say the wrong thing. But no, he was bang on. He was brilliant.
Aye. No, fair play. So Alex came, is it fair to say, rejected career, but your career at that point is only about 3 to 4 games old. So it almost didn't start, and he's reignited that. And what was Alex's teams like at the time?
He took over a great squad that Dick had, the Boers, Avaladzis, players like that, Big Ammo, Craig Moore, Fergie, Arthur Newman, all these guys were still there. But he just came in and gave them a different belief, basically. Give them a rain, at least a life to go and play again. But you've got, at that time, Celtic had a right good team as well. Yeah. And it was, we would win the league 1 year, they would win it the next, we would win it, they would win it. And then Alec came in, he won it, or he never won it the first year, he won the double the first year. I think he won both cups, didn't he? And then won the treble the next year. And then Gordon Strachan came, then he won it, and then Alec won it again. So the squads at that time, there was nothing between them.
And in your Advocat 3 or 4 games, did you play against Celtic in any of them?
I did. I played, my first start was against Celtic in the League Cup semi-final.
What's that like? What's that experience like for you?
Well, that was a weird one because I remember we stayed at the Crulland Hotel up in East Kilbride, and obviously you're not thinking you're playing or you're, I don't know if there was still a rule at that point. I know that there was a lot of injuries in a centre-half position. And I can remember we stayed overnight in the Crowland, and it was a night-time game. And my dad phoned me about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. He's like to me, good luck tonight, get stuck in. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, you're playing? And I'm like, what? How do you know?
Aye.
And he's like, I just spoke to Big Andy Smalley.
Shut up.
He said, you're playing. And I went, you're kidding me on. So I thought it was a wind-up. So I go back to my room. And to be fair, 20 minutes later, my phone goes, Dick Advocat, come to my room, I need to speak to you. And he's like to me, playing the 3 at the back tonight, you're playing the middle one. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, you're playing the middle centre-half. And then that was it. I'm glad he told me when he did, rather than the night before, because then that means you don't sleep, you start thinking about things too much. Yeah. And no, he's,
yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? It's a League Cup semi-final, yeah. Biggest rivals, massive game. Mm-hmm. And we've not done any shaping or anything before it, but you've been put in this position.
We never, it's really good thing about Dick, he used to work on 11v11s all the time. Yeah. So we had worked on it, but just no, like maybe me starting or whatever. But done maybe the opposite team that was playing, would be like in a back three or whatever. And I think that night it was me, Big Scott Walson and Bert Conteman was the back three. I think Big Ammo was injured. And we played Celtic in the league maybe a week or two later as well. And it was basically the same team. We had to go to Parkhead with like a squad that was like all younger ones, guys that weren't really playing much. And we managed to get one each draw. We get beaten in the League Cup game. I made a mistake. That was a game that Larson handed over Stefan. And I think Mickey Moles or Claude Arena get sent off. I think they beat us 2-1. But what an experience. And actually in the game, apart from the mistake that I made, I done all right. And then I think that they had that wee bit of trust in me that they could throw me in. But then obviously in the summer, I messed it up.
So, just thinking here, so you only played 3 or 4 games for Dick and 2 of them are against Celtic?
Aye.
That's no bad corner.
I know. But that was the... Probably at that time, the League Cup was... That was the only thing we could really play for against Celtic, but a few points ahead of us at that time. And that was kind of the getting to the end for Dick.
So, and it would have been at Hampden. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what's that like? Had you played at Hampden before then?
No.
You hadn't played schoolboys or, you know, no, or any Mad Cup finals as a youth or anything?
No, just straight in. Like, and it would have been the old dress rooms not then as well. It might have been the would have been done up again since, but it would have been just when it had been done up.
Yeah.
So it was what an experience, especially if it was the full thing. It was my dad phoning me and saying good luck. Now I was, and then obviously actually was playing, and it just shows you that people knew before anybody else what the team was going to be.
Big Andy Pickety, man.
So I don't know. I don't even know how he knew. I don't know, but that's how it happened. And I was like, oh, fuck's sake. But aye.
So you're 17, 18 at this point. You don't know until hours before it you're playing against Celtic, you're walking out to Hampden for the first time. What's that like walking out the tunnel that night?
You can't hear it. You're concentrating in the game and then like you line up and then obviously all the Rangers fans are signing all the Celtic fans, so it's like a big rabble. And but see when you're like lining up and you're concentrating in the game, you can't hear everything about. And then the worst thing is like obviously they do the huddle. And then that's when you start feeling fucking blood starting to boil and all the Rangers fans are going after them nut. And then that's how, after that game, I used to turn away. See, when I used to turn my back and look at the fans. Because I didn't want to see that, because I knew that if I was too, like my emotions go up, yeah, and the better in me, I would do something stupid. Like I'd tackle or something. So I used to look away so that I never got too wound up.
And the game itself, do you feel the pressure during that? Or is it? Or can you just disassociate yourself once the whistle goes and the game starts?
I can remember having the old like shaky legs and like, you know, like the energy's zapped for you for the first like 5 minutes. I don't know, something happened in the game where I don't know if it was Big Scotty Wilson passed the ball to me and I went to kind of as if I was going to play it back to the goalie and I dummied it and like Chris Sutton ran past me and I just thought I got confidence for that. And then I just grew into the game. But no, it was a strange feeling, because I remember going to Parkhead as well, and even though they're singing all their songs and whatever, you manage to blank out and you can't really hear much.
It's something that I don't want to say it's diluted, because it's still a big game, right? It's an amazing spectacle. But see, when you go to Hampden, I mean, even back then, when we went to Parkhead, we might get 8,000 tickets. They get the Brimley Road when they came to us, so they had maybe 7,500 at the time. And it was nuts, right? And then you would go to that game and it was 50-50. I just think when we play Celtic at Hampden, I think a lot of the stadiums no near Ibrox, and to be fair, probably even more than the Celtic Stadium, I think it just turns the whole thing up a notch because it's a 50-50 thing. And I think a wee bit of that's been diluted because you know, the last while there was like 700 to 800 fans in each, and you know, the odd one where there's none. What do you think about that? Do you think it should be more, or do you think it's all right the way it is? You know, as a player, what do you, you know,
as a player, you want your fans there. You want, like, when you've got 8,000 fans at Parkhead, you want them there because they do help. If you're having a hard game, or not so much as like a player yourself, as a team, they can get you through it. Like if you do something good as a team, you hear them all cheering, and it gives you a lift. And it would have been the same for them coming to Ibrox, but I can understand why they've done it, because obviously they get the full stand at Ibrox, we get put in a wee corner. I can understand why the club done it, but as a player, you want the fans there.
Had you ever played in a game where there was no visiting fans? Is that something that you'd come across in your career?
I've played in a game where there was no fans.
What was that?
Inter Milan Champions League. I never played, I was on the bench. It was only hospitality fans, so Rangers could bring their flight load of hospitality. And the same Inter Milan, it was their hospitality, but there was no fans in the ground.
How bizarre was that?
It's mental, because you could hear it, everything. I've got Viakis now. Aye. Hamilton. Aye. He's in the stand and he's shouting to me, "Bobby, a banger." And you can hear it echoing through the stadium. And I'm like, oh, brilliant, man. But it was weird as in. It was a flat game as well. I think they beat us 1-0, but it was like flat. There was no really any tempo to the game or anything. But it was a weird one.
Through your European exploits, what's the sort of biggest games you can remember through European nights?
I can remember my first night going to... I knew I was at games before this, right, but I couldn't really remember them because I was too young. But I can remember going to the Leeds Rangers game at Ibrox. That was my first game that I could remember being at. My dad's pal took me, and the atmosphere was unbelievable. And then, like, the best one to be part of playing in was like the Inter Milan game at home. And we qualify for the knockout stage. Just the full build up to that, the having to wait at the end for a couple of minutes to see what was happening in the other game, right, and then getting told that the game was done and you're through. It was an unbelievable feeling. And saying that, that was when, like, the fans were right behind us, and they were brilliant. The way they see the atmosphere is in the European games, but it's electric. It was like that back then, and it was great to be a part of.
I ended up in hospital that night. I was working in London at the time, Monday to Friday. I was raging, man, because what a season to miss European games. I was obviously up the road on a Friday night, and I was able to go to the games at the weekend. So I spent that Champions League campaign watching it in Cock Tavern in London, which was underground at the Smithfield Market. And we're obviously watching the Rangers game. And game's done, and as you say, there was a bit of media
and Porto.
Porto game still playing, and so we don't know if we're qualified or not. And there was three or four days in the pub, mental pub, mobbed, and phoning pals who are sitting in the house watching Sky. They flicked it out to tell, and then they're going out the park. They're going out the park. Like, just shit. They're going out the park. Right. So there's three or four guys spread out in it, and I'm one of them. And I've got a corner. Shit. I've got a corner. Right. Mad. And the minute. I sat my throat, right, and I jumped up in there, and somebody sitting here must have moved their chair. And as my feet took off the ground, the chair legs went like that, and I came down, and my ankle turned. I almost seen the sole of my foot, but I was steaming. And I went back to my digs in south side of London, and boiled, and woke up in the morning, went to go to bed, ended up in the flare.
Forgot you had done it?
Aye, and that was that size. So I remember that game well, and unfortunately, I didn't get to any of the European games that because of circumstance, but what a great achievement.
We should have actually went further, because we should have beat Villarreal as well. We actually let them back into the game at Ibrox, and then boy, they missed a chance close to the end that would have put us through. But I think when the teams that we played that season, Porto, even to go to the group stage, Porto and Milan, even Armida, I think we struggled against them when we played them.
I think they battered Celtic, was that just a year before? Or?
I can't remember. I can remember going to play them away, Bratislava, and it was
wild.
Mental. Freezing as well. And I think I'm sure we got a draw that night. That's what kind of serves up for the Inter Milan game at home.
So, your European game, I mean, you mentioned some of them, Inter Milan's, Porto, Villarreal. Who else did you play against in your European ventures?
I played the Copenhagen game when we qualified at Copenhagen. I came on the second half. Some Henningberg maybe got injured and get put into that game. That wasn't a nice game to get put into because we were struggling. And we ended up short of Valencia, scored an overhead kick and we got a lift, and then they scored and then we had to score again. But that was at the club at that time, nobody really knew what was happening because that was when Barry was getting told he was leaving or he was didn't play in that game because he was meant to be going to Blackburn the next day or two. So the boys went out, he was also the captain, so it was a strange feeling where he wasn't there. But they pulled through. That was a proper good squad that.
And you and Barry obviously have done a lot together in your life later on, you know, managing and coaching and stuff like that. But when did you become pals?
It was a weird one because I used to play in the Glasgow Cup. Mm-hmm. So I think you were allowed two overage players and Fergie played in it sometimes. So he would come down and play with us, even though he was partly like Walter's first team in that and the reserve team. And he obviously, he's Hamilton and I was Glasgow. And how it really hung with me is I heard Derek mention it as well. His dad was a roofer.
Oh, yeah.
And my dad used to, he's not a roofer, but he used to labour to them. Mm-hmm. And he got to know Barry's dad. He was on
seriously?
Jobs. Aye, and then obviously they've mentioned it and he's went, oh, my son's there as well. And then so got to know him like that. Barry would pick me up some of the days to go to training. just got to be pals that way. And then obviously, he was in the first team, then I came into the first team. So,
what's the age difference between the two of you?
Must be maybe 4 years or something. It'll be 3 or 4 years, aye.
So, you won some trophies, two titles, two cups, is that right?
Well, one two under Dick, no, didn't need to play much. And I won two under Alec.
And I can obviously only speak from my own experiences and win some trophies when I was a kid, you know, playing football and fortunate enough to win some trophies with Sons of Struth, and it's a great feeling, and I've obviously witnessed Rangers winning loads of trophies during my time and very, very fortunate. What's it like in the park when you win a league and that whistle goes?
Well, the both leagues I won under the Alec were both in the last day of the season, so it was more emotion than anything else, just glad to go over the line. Surreal experiences. I think the Dunfermline one at home.
Yeah.
We were expected to battle them.
I guess Sutton says it was planned.
Oh, I know, but I'm sure it was planned at Kilmarnock. They get a doing as well. But listen, it was there. They missed a penalty, so they kind of blamed it about themselves. We knew that there was a job had to get done, and Dunfermline scored first that game as well. We were getting beat 1-0.
So it's bizarre, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And it was weird because even when the players were scoring, they weren't celebrating. They were just grabbing the ball and back to the
other line. Was it 6 or 7?
Six.
Incredible.
And it came down to a penalty with Mikel Arteta. Oh,
of course, aye.
And that was maybe the last couple of minutes of the game, 3-4 minutes of the game. And to be fair, for a kid, because he's maybe a year younger than me, or the same age. So put that pressure on yourself to go on.
Even on a no bad career?
No, still doing all right now, aren't he? But to have that pressure on him, step up and slot it away, and as if it was, he did it every day. It was crazy. It was mental. But the Hibs one, I think there was a feeling that we weren't going to do it that day. We knew we'd won the game, but we didn't think it was going to be enough to win the league. And obviously the things that happened in the Motherwell game was incredible, and still think about it, still seeing like Davey and the Doc, and obviously Big Billy Thompson's not here now. But we were in the dugout and he's chatting with, and got that Motherwell scored, and you're like, fuck off, Tomo. He's like, I'm fucking telling you. He's like, they've not scored. He's like, they have. And then the next minute the Rangers are interrupted.
Aye.
You're all like, fucking hell, they have. And he done it again. He's like, they've scored again. Aye. We're like, aye, right. And the next minute they've erupted again. I've never seen it. I don't know if you see it in the videos. We still had 5 minutes to play, but Hibs were in Europe. Mm. If the results stayed the same, Hibs were in Europe and we had won the league. So they weren't the interested in going forward. We weren't the interested. We were just trying to keep the ball. And you've got Alec Ray running on, jumping on Barry's back.
During the game.
And they're like celebrating as if it's done. And you see Ferg going, oh, no, we need to keep going. Or was it Ferg maybe have jumped on Alec Ray's back? Well, that was still 5 minutes to go. But it was mental. Mental, and then obviously the full time, because we were there in my tracksuits, weren't expecting anything. But luckily, Jimmy Bell was clued up. We had the t-shirts and all that already in our box under the
bus. Did you not know about that?
No, never knew. He done it all himself. Went and pulled into the bus, pulled the box out. He's go, lads, t-shirts. So then we've got the t-shirts, went back out got the trophy and celebrated in front of the fans, but never knew.
I think they were certainly second favourites in a two-horse race coming into the end of that season. And although as a fan, you always want your team to win, I'm the same as you. I just thought, can't happen. You wanted it to happen. There's no, but deep inside you thought, this isn't happening. Yeah. And I went and cut the grass that day. And I had the motor park in the drive, the windy down, the radio on. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, I can't believe it, Listen, the boy next door to me at the time, his father-in-law was an old Celtic goalie for Blantyre, terrible. John Fallon, mad Celtic family, right? And I'm like, I know it's happening at 5:45 and his final whistle goes, right? And I just remember hearing the raid, I went, and the commentary that they gave in the radio was almost identical minutes later when me and McDonald scored the second goal. It was like, and the ball coming around, McDonald's in the header, right? And I'm like, why is the radio playing repeat? They're doing that on the telly, you'll see a repeat of a goal, but I'm thinking, and it took a couple, it's sunk in, and by God, man, I couldn't believe it. And then I've ran in the house, I've just jumped a bit mad, but to be there.
See that full day, Craig, it was like obviously gone, because normally we would, can't even remember if we stayed overnight. Normally, if we played Hibs and Hearts, we would go and stay overnight. But I don't even think we did. I think we travelled on the day of the game. Obviously, we're tracksuits. Like a big occasion like that, we would have the club suit on. We had our tracksuits on. And then, after games like that, there would have been a big spread put on where your family and that can come back. And we, after the game, we were on the bus back to Ibrox. We'd done before... They didn't know if they were going to let the fans in. Yep. And then there was that many outside that they had to let them in. So they said, right, we're going to give you maybe an hour or something, let the fans come, let them fill the stadium. So we were sitting in the Thorn Suite. Everybody was starving, had nothing to eat. Rod been drinking on the way back in the bus. So they had to send one of the security guards to McDonald's.
No way.
And I swear to God, they came back with like 25 Big Mac meals or McChicken meals. And
that's helicopter Sundays.
That's what the player was eating. Mental. And when you tell people, aye, good one. Well, I'm telling you, that's what happened.
I really appreciate the hours that some of you are investing into watching the podcast that we've done in the past. But I'd like to ask you to do me one favour that would take you seconds. If you enjoy the show, please hit the subscribe button. And if you enjoy any show in particular, please click on the thumbs up. It'll make a massive difference to the podcast. So thanks very much for your continued support, feedback, and I hope you enjoy this one.